And once again, welcome. As we've assembled together on this beautiful Lord's Day, we've been wonderfully blessed with the freedoms of the country in which we live and the blessings of the health that we are enjoying, as well as other opportunities that make it possible for us to assemble together. And certainly we ought to be grateful to God for each and every one of those things. We are continuing our study of godly homes in an ungodly world, and this is a study that we have addressed for quite some time now, dealing with a number of different issues. One quick thing that I want to say before I actually get into the lesson this morning, and that is because of the season that is upon us, and that is with a lot of family get-togethers and so on, people traveling and so on, I've decided that after this lesson, I'm going to take a two-week break from this particular study, and we will resume dealing with godly families on the 8th of January of next year, and then we will conclude this study after that. And I believe this is an important topic and something that I want as many of us to have the opportunity to hear as possible. And of course, if for some reason you are unable to hear the lessons, you do know that they are available. They are all being recorded, and up to last Sunday, they're available on the website, so you can get the entire series up to this point. And we will continue to do the same with the rest of it. We are in the midst of a study now dealing with the various roles within the family. We've established the importance of marriage, and we've established how marriage is for life, and we've spent considerable time dealing with those things. We've talked about the importance of exchange of the marriage vows that you exchange with one another, and we even talked about how the marriage relationship is actually a covenant relationship, and it needs to be looked at as a covenant rather than simply a contract. A contract being based on not necessarily trust. A covenant involves trust between all parties, and a covenant is for life. And when we look at the marriage covenant, it is something that is for life. But of course, having established that aspect of the study, last week we began examining the various roles within the home. And of course, we began with a study of the husband, and I thought I was going to get through the entire lesson last week, but I did not. And so we are going to conclude dealing with husbands this week, and then next year when we resume this study, we're going to talk about the role of wives, then we're going to talk about the role of parents, then we're going to talk about the role of children, and we are going to conclude our study by examining some things that the Bible says about being single. And that's the remainder of this particular study. Now, in dealing with a husband, of course, the reason we start with a husband is because the role of the husband is the foundation of the home. God told Adam, or as Moses recorded in Genesis chapter 2, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. It is the husband who initiates the new home according to God's word, and that's why it is important that he understands what his responsibility is. And of course we spent considerable time emphasizing last week that he is the head of the house. That is a God-given responsibility that the man has. And I emphasize that it is a responsibility, it's not a suggestion. In a family, God has given the husband the role of being the head in the house. And if he's not fulfilling that role, he is failing in his responsibilities. And so it's very important to understand that. And of course, in dealing with a husband being the head, we also emphasize that while his wife is to be in subjection to him, and we will examine that when we talk about wives, God did not intend for his wife to be a slave. God did not intend for his wife to be his footstool and the one who is there to satisfy whatever his selfish desires might be. The Bible is very clear in pointing out that the husband is to be concerned about his wife, and we're going to see that in our lesson today. She was his helpmeet. She is his helpmeet. Taken from his side. Not his foot. or his foot to be his footstool, or his head to rule over him, but by his side to be his companion. And that must be clearly understood. And of course, we also talked about being the head of the house, that the husband has the responsibility to take the lead. He needs to lead, and he needs to make decisions. He needs to act upon being the head. He also needs to lead by being a proper example. He needs to lead by being willing to listen. And we talked a little bit about that last week. There's lots of problems in families because of a lack of communication. When a man is going to make a decision that affects his family, especially if it is an important decision, he needs to have input from those who are going to be affected by it. That's necessary if you want a happy home. And so he needs to keep that in mind as he makes his decision. And of course he has to make the right decision, not necessarily the popular one, but it should be done by understanding what is actually needed. And you can't do that if you don't listen to those who are within your family. And we talked last week about how the husband is to love his wife, mentioned in Ephesians 5:25. Verses 28 and 29, mentioned twice in that text, Colossians 3, verse 19, he is to love his wife, not to be bitter toward her. 1 Corinthians 7, 3 through 5, where he is to render unto her due affection. And we talked about all those things a little bit last week. Now today we want to continue by noting some more characteristics of the godly husband. And where we are going to begin this morning is in 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse number 7. 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse number 7. In that particular text we read, husbands, likewise, and of course the reason Peter says likewise is in verses 1 through 6, he has given some instructions concerning wives toward their husbands. And then he says, husbands, likewise, dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. In this verse, we find a number of principles to give consideration to as the husband is the head of the house. This is a good verse for us as husbands to memorize. We really ought to weigh what this verse says. And I want to spend a few minutes talking about 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse number 7. There are primarily two things that we're going to specifically address, and then there's others that come out as we go through the rest of this lesson. First of all, it says that husbands are to dwell with their wives with understanding. Now, what exactly does that mean? You know, we all hear jokes about how difficult it is to understand the mind of a woman. And I'm sure that women make the same jokes about men. And the reason why it is treated that way is not a realization that it's not serious, but it's because men and women are different. We are wired differently. A few years ago, a man named John Gray wrote a book entitled Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And the whole point of that book was to emphasize that we are different. Men and women think differently. Men and different are physiologically different from one another. Our body structures are differently. We reason in a different way. There's all kinds of things that are different between men and women. Their emotions, the way that they handle situations, the way they approach things is different. And I'm going to tell you right now that those differences are not something that we ought to ignore. And any good book that's dealing with the subject of marriage relationships, including those from a biblical perspective, will acknowledge these differences. In fact, Peter is acknowledging those differences in this particular statement. And I want to tell you right now, if you want a happy home, if you want a marriage that is thriving, husbands need to know their wives. They need to get to know their wives. And it is to your advantage to get to know your wife and to get to understand your wife. Not only are men and women different, but every woman is different. And this woman that you have taken to be your wife, who is going to be your spouse, for the rest of your life, the better you get to know her, the better off you are going to be. The better off you are going to be and able to help her become everything that she needs to be and to become a better. You need to seek to understand her needs and her emotional concerns. You need to know the things that she likes and she dislikes. You need to know what her strengths are and her weaknesses. You need to know the things that are important to her. You need to know the little things that make her happy and the little things that upset her. You need to know those things. And with this knowledge, you're going to help her as she deals with her problems and frustrations and other troubles, and you're going to prevent a few of those problems. So the better you get to know your wife, the better off you're going to be. And do you know how you get to know your wife? You pay attention. You pay attention. That goes along with listening. Something that's a challenge for us as men. Because quite often we don't do a lot of paying attention. We just kind of move along and do our own thing. And when a problem comes, we deal with it our own way. We need to realize that our wife is different, and we need to pay attention to her, and it will enhance that marriage relationship. So it says in this text to dwell with her with understanding. But the next thing that it says is that he is to honor his wife. And that's something that we also need to seriously think about. The word honor that is used here is a word that means to treat as something of value or worth. To treat one with respect. The idea there is of respect. In John chapter 4 and verse number 4, when Jesus said, a prophet is not without honor in his own country. That's the same word that we have in this text here. And the point is that Jesus was not receiving due respect in Nazareth because of the way that he grew up. And they did not want to see him as the Messiah. They did not want to honor him for who he was. Instead, they wanted to just see him as the carpenter's son. And that was not sufficient. They needed to respect him as Emmanuel, that is God with us. In 1 Peter chapter 1 and in verse number 7, you read that the genuineness of your faith, though it is tested, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. The word honor there is this same type of an idea. It's to treat something with value and worth, to respect. Now, I'm going to tell you, when you look at the society in which Peter is writing this, it was a society in which women were not necessarily treated with the respect that they deserved. In many instances, women were treated as a piece of property. In the scheme of things, you had at the lower rung the slave, and then the woman was right above the slave, and then the man was above the woman. And there was this air of superiority toward those things, and quite often wives were not treated properly. That's one thing that sets the Bible apart. It calls for husbands to honor their wives. And what that means is that he treats his wife as someone who is special. He cherishes his wife the way that he would his own body. Peter goes on to emphasize that in the text by describing it as one who is a weaker vessel. You know, that's an interesting statement there because, you know, there are some who, when they see this, they think of how the typical woman is physiologically weaker than the typical man from a strength standpoint. And that's true. Feminists, if you don't like what I just said, sorry. It's true. Don't have an issue with me. It's life. Whether you want to admit it or not. And we've got problems in society today because women refuse to accept that they are women and their limitations. And men refuse to accept that they are men and accept those responsibilities and their limitations. But it remains the truth. But I contend that that's not exactly what Peter has in mind here. He's not talking about physical weakness. Rather, what he is talking about is that she should be treated like something special. Let's see if I can illustrate that. I have here, I got a couple of glasses out of my cabinet this morning. One of them is this little plastic cup. I don't know how much is. Oh. Never mind, it don't matter. It's okay. It's worth less than a dollar. It's just a plastic cup. It's cheap. On the other hand, I also have a crystal glass that we bring out on special occasions. Now, I'm not going to throw this to anybody because it's valuable. Now let me ask you, of these two glasses, which one is the weaker vessel? It would be this one. The crystal glass. And this is pure crystal. Which one is more valuable? The pure crystal. So when you see the idea of something being weaker, this is going to be something that is going to be handled more delicately. We have a box that we put this up in. We only bring it out on special occasions. And every time I handle one of these glasses, I do so with a realization, I don't want it to break. We've only got so many of them. And that's a part of the matching set. So when you think of a weaker vessel, it doesn't necessarily mean worthless or worth less. It could mean more precious. And that is the idea of what the weaker vessel is in this particular text there. And you need to think about treating your wife that way as a husband. She is delicate. And she is to be treated with that type of an honor. What it means when it says that a husband honors his wife, it means that he doesn't abuse her. He doesn't belittle her. He doesn't talk down to her in front of others. Or when others are not around. Furthermore, he's not constantly looking for her faults. And he's not constantly criticizing her all the time. You know men that do that to their wives? And wives that do that to their husbands? And people that just do that. They're just constantly criticizing everybody. And I tell you what, those who are in a relationship with a criticizer will have low self-esteem. They'll be miserable in that relationship. If a husband honors his wife, he's not going to treat her that way. Instead, what he's going to do is he's going to set her apart. She is a part of him. And he realizes that. That they have become one flesh. God has joined them together. And they are not to be separated from one another. She is his confidant. She is one to whom he can go when he has problems and when he has frustrations. He can come to her and he can cry on her shoulders. Yes, men cry. And she's there to listen and she cares. And she's going to support him and she's going to build him up in those things. He will seek to strengthen his wife. When he sees weaknesses, when he sees areas where she needs to improve, he will, in a loving way, seek to improve her and make her better and to build her up. He's proud of her. He's willing and he wants to be with her in public. He shows her off. This is my wife. He tells her that he loves her. Men, women need to hear that. You know, you heard the joke the one time where the man at the wedding said, or told his wife years later, he said, when we got married, I told you I love you. If I change my mind, I'll let you know. No, it doesn't work that way. You tell your wife daily that you love her. She needs to hear that. And it doesn't do you too much harm either to remind yourself that you need to love her. That's what it means to honor the wife. And you'll notice there in 1 Peter chapter 3 and in verse number 7 that after he says that you give her honor as to the weaker vessel as being heirs together of the grace of life that your prayers be not hindered. He says you are heirs together of the grace of life. You're looking to go to heaven together. To spend eternity with one another. That's the idea of honoring the wife. And that's one of the instructions that a husband is given toward his wife. Now, the next responsibility that he has is that he is to provide for his wife and for his family. And since the beginning of man, man has had the responsibilities to provide for the family. In Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19, you read about the curse that was given to Adam. And it said, in the sweat of your face, you're going to bring forth food. And the point was, is that he was going to have to work harder. Now, I want it clearly understood that even prior to that, that the man had a job. Adam had responsibilities. Prior to this, Adam was responsible for tending the garden. He was responsible for tending to the animals and naming the animals. He had responsibilities. But because of sin, the toil became harder. And because of sin, there are setbacks associated with work. Nevertheless, since that time, as you read in Scripture, man is described as the provider. But here's the interesting thing, is even though that was actually a part of the curse, not working but intensified work, or work with disappointments and thorns and all those types of things, in reality, is that not also the blessing for a man? And when he does his job, when he provides for his family, he can pillow his head at night knowing that he is useful to this family. Knowing that he is fulfilling what he knows his responsibilities to be. In Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 12, you read that the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much. What a true thing to understand. The man is to provide for his family. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and in verse number 8, a text in which Paul is dealing with the responsibilities of the church and also who is responsible for taking care of the needy within a family. Notice in verse 16 he says, to the best of your ability, you do not let the church be burdened. And there are restrictions upon what the church can do from a benevolent standpoint. But notice verse number 8 in that text. You read there in verse number 8, it says, if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That text squarely warns the man, if you do not provide for your family, in God's eyes, you have denied the faith, and you are worse than an infidel. You are worse than somebody that doesn't believe what God says at all. You are worse than somebody that doesn't believe in God. That's what an infidel is. That's the unbeliever in this text. Man has the responsibility. In Ephesians 5, verses 28 and 29, a text that we have continually examined in our study, Paul said husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. For he who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. Notice how he says that a man, he loves his own body, he nourishes it. What's that mean? He provides for it. He cares about himself. And he provides for himself what he needs so that he can continue to function. Well, the way that a husband is to nourish his own body, he's to nourish his wife as well, according to that text. The man has the responsibility to provide within the household. Sadly, we live in a society where there are far too many deadbeat dads. Where there are far too many deadbeat husbands. Those who refuse to properly fulfill their roles that God has given them within the family. There are many who abandon their spouse and their children. And there are others who will just go out and fornicate and create a child and never give a second thought to raising that child. How tragic it is that we have a society that in a sense just turns its head to the real problem there. And it doesn't hold the father accountable. It doesn't hold the husband that abandons his wife accountable the way that it ought to. And at other times, sometimes the man fails to provide for his family because he just won't do what he's supposed to do. Sometimes he is a poor manager of the resources in the home. Sometimes he's wasteful. Sometimes he's lazy. Sometimes he's not content with the basics. And he goes out
and he causes more problem. He increases the debt within a family. Sometimes his wife and his family are not content, and they make it difficult for the husband to provide for his family. And when you have these types of issues, what you need to understand is what the problem is worldliness and materialism has entered into that home, and it has tainted that godly home. And it's removing the godliness from the home, or driving it out and replacing it with worldliness. We are constantly reminded within scriptures that we are to be content. Godliness with contentment is great gain, Paul told Timothy. He said we need to be content with what we have. You brought nothing into this world, and you're not going to leave with anything. And I've used the illustration many times. You never see a hearse going down the street with a U-Haul attached to it. You can't take it with you. But yet, how many families are there that are built on material possessions? And all of a sudden, when the bill collectors come and they want you to pay for those things that you bought that you didn't have the money for, the money problems start. And then the family fights start between the husband and wife. And the family starts deteriorating. Something for every one of us to think about. Husbands are to provide for their wives, and sometimes that, and their family. And sometimes that means not giving them something that they want, because it's not really what is best. In Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse number 5, you read the next thing that a husband is to do is he is to protect his family. Just as he is to provide for the family, he has a responsibility to protect his family. And that's a whole nother role. You read in Ephesians chapter 5 and in verse number 25, where it says, "Their husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." Christ loved the church so much that he was willing to die for her. And the description of that text where the husband and wife is concerned is he tells the husband, you need to be willing to protect your family to the point of giving your life for your family if that is what is necessary. I'm going to tell you right now, honoring your wife, when you read about how you are to honor her as the weaker vessel, that involves protecting her. Just as you nourish and cherish your own body, you nourish and cherish your wife. And you do whatever you have to protect her in whatever way you need to protect her. You see, the home ought to be a place of refuge. The home ought to be a place where people can escape from the troubles and the cares of this world. It ought to be a place where you can let down your guard and where you can feel safe in the midst of those that you love and you care about, and those who love you and care about you. And the wife and children, they ought to feel that home is a refuge that they want to go to. Children ought to want to go home. The wife ought to want to be at home. And the husband ought to want to be there too. And a part of protection, and the reason the home is a place where you want to go, is it's a place where you feel safe. You know, when we hear about these home invasion robberies that take place, you know the terror of a home invasion robbery? And I am thankful that I have not experienced that. It's not so much that the possessions have been taken out of the home. While for some that's disturbing, what the real problem is the home, which is supposed to be a place of safety, has been violated. And you no longer feel safe there, or as safe as you did before. Well, a husband needs to do everything he can to ensure that that home is safe, that there is protection. And that includes physical protection from the harms of society, including the elements. That means that he puts a roof over the head of his family. And to the best of his ability, he sees to it that they have food and they have clothing, that they're fed, that they have whatever the necessities are of life. Now, it may not be very much, but he does to the best of his ability, and he goes out and works so that he can see that they have those necessities of life actually taken care of. But this protection also includes what you might describe as emotional protection. And what I mean by that is along with some of the things I said about the home earlier, the home ought to be, it should not be a place where you find your worst criticisms, and a place where you're afraid to speak up, and a place where you're miserable, and where you're constantly discouraged. The home should not be that kind of a place. And a husband, he needs to do what he can to protect the home from that type of an environment. Protect the home from being a miserable place. And of course, in addition to that, there is also the moral and the spiritual protection that needs to be provided within the family. And that brings me to another point that I want to spend a few moments talking about. And that is that a husband has a responsibility within the home to be a spiritual leader. You know, we talk about him leading in the family and being the head of the house. And what we often think of is the physical aspect of that. And that's absolutely true. And it's my hope that we have seen in our study thus far that that is the responsibility of the husband. He is to provide for her physical needs, to protect her physically, to love her physically. All those things are necessary. But then there's also the spiritual concern. And the role of the husband extends into spiritual matters. And you could take this of every one of these points that we've actually discussed. For example, dealing with the subject of love. The husband is to love his wife. And we discussed this last week. How does he love his wife? The way that Christ loved the church. You have a spiritual application to that love. We noted last week that there are four different Greek words that are translated English or love in the English language. And all four of those words are associated with the marriage relationship. The relationship between a husband and his wife. Whether it be the familial love, whether it be the agape love, whether it be the love of a friend, Philadelphia. Or Eros. They all apply in this relationship. And the husband needs to look at the way that Christ loved the church. And that needs to be the foundation of the way that he loves his wife. And he cares about her. And the way that he treats her. It's governed by an understanding of Christ and his church. Now let me ask you something, men. When you give consideration to that, do you think that that says something about how you need to learn what the Bible says about the church? This relationship to Christ makes it important in even another aspect. So keep that in mind. Spiritually, he needs to demonstrate godly love. And he needs to be a spiritual provider. Yes, he provides food, clothing, and shelter. But he also needs to provide spiritual nourishment within the home. He needs to take the spiritual lead. And he needs to ensure that his family is being brought up as the description of Ephesians chapter 6, which we'll deal with in another lesson, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That's talking about fathers raising their children. But it applies to all who are in the household. He needs to provide spiritual nourishment for the family. And he needs to take the lead in that. If it's lacking, he's the one that needs to instigate it and see that there is spiritual teaching and spiritual training taking place within the family. He needs to lead by a proper godly example. He needs to do those things that are pleasing to God. You know, when I see Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, you know, we quote that verse quite a bit. Jesus said, after saying, "You are the light of the world," he says, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. Glorify your Father who is in heaven." Now, we know that applies to being an example to the world. Is your family included as a part of that world to whom you are to be an example? Absolutely. So if you are to be an example to outsiders and let your light so shine before them, should you not also let your light so shine before your family? What is the best hope that you have of raising godly children that love God and fear Him and love His Word and love His church and are willing to follow after His pattern? It's by the example that you set for them. And sometimes we fail in this. I want to tell you right now, as a godly husband And as the leader of a family, I have a responsibility to be a godly example. Isn't that the premises of 1 Corinthians 7, 14 and 15? You know, when you read in that text there, it talks about how the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband, the believing husband, and the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the believing wife. You know, I actually heard somebody the other day say that that's justification for a believer marrying an unbeliever. You talk about misunderstanding the text. I'm going to tell you right now that a believing wife is not going to automatically save her husband. He's not going to get to heaven on the wife ticket. And the unbelieving wife's not going to get to heaven on the believing husband ticket. What it means is by you being a godly example, you have an opportunity to teach that person by the way you live. And over time, winning that soul to Christ. And we talked a little bit about that text and what it involves. So you understand when you look at that text, it talks about being a godly example and the hope that you have of winning your spouse. And isn't that what 1 Peter chapter 3 verses 1 through 6 says about a believing wife with an unbelieving husband? By being a proper example. So, as the husband leads, he leads to lead by being a godly example, and he needs to provide that for it. He needs to provide spiritual nourishment by praying openly and looking for opportunities to study God's Word with his family. We're going to talk more about that when we get to parenting. Deuteronomy 6. He leads by attending worship services and taking his family with him to the worship services. He makes sure that they're ready and that they get the most out of it. He excels spiritually, doing as much as he can for the Lord, developing spiritual leadership in his life. And he influences his family that way. He's a spiritual provider. But he is also the spiritual protector. And what I mean by that is not only does he positively lead them where they need to go, he protects the house from the unwanted element. He makes the home a place of spiritual safety. Think about that for a minute. What does that mean? That means that he does everything he can to keep immorality out of the home. In an immoral world, he needs to do everything that he can to ensure that the immoral influences of the world are not influencing his family in the home. Are there immoral influences that are influencing our families today? What do we watch on television? What do we watch on the computer? What type of music do we listen to? What type of books do we read? We have everything accessible to us right at our fingertips. We bring computers with us to church. How many of you have a cell phone, a smartphone? That's a computer! And you can use it for good. Or you can use it for evil. As a husband and father in a home, as the spiritual leader, you need to protect your home from the ungodly elements of this world. As the husband, he needs to pray for his wife. And as a father, he needs to pray for his children. Because he cares about their spiritual well-being. And in addition to that, he is alert and he's aware of what's happening around him. You want to know another reason why as a husband and father you need to study the Bible? Not simply because it's commanded and because it's what's expected of you as a Christian. You need to do it because the better you know the Word of God, the better you are to protect your family from the wiles of the devil. Do not be ignorant of his devices, 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse number 11. He's described in 1 Peter 5 and verse number 8 as a roaring lion wandering about seeking whom he may devour. And Peter began by saying, you be sober, you be vigilant, you be aware of those things. As a husband in the home, you need to do that. It's your responsibility to protect your family from ungodliness. Something to think about. As a godly husband, he needs to set godly standards. He needs to set godly standards for the household, both for his wife and for his children and for himself. And I'll tell you right now that if you will do these things, you will be fulfilling your role and you will drastically increase the potential of your home being a happy and a godly home. And that's why it's worth putting forth these efforts. And thus we can see the role of the husband. And when you exchange vows, please, as men, take the time to understand these things. You discuss them with your fiancé, and if needed, you find someone with a good biblical foundation of the home, and you sit down and study the Word of God with them. I'm going to tell you right now, classes will never hurt you. If you're going to get married to somebody, sit down and discuss with somebody about what's involved. I'll offer my services for what they're worth if you need them. And then one final observation that I want to make. And I want to talk here to wives here for a minute. And we'll deal more with this in a couple of weeks. But I think this applies to this text here, or the lesson here. And that is, wife, understand that the task of a husband leading is a serious and difficult, and at times it is a frightening task. To realize that you have to make the decisions as the husband, and right or wrong, and whether you succeed or fail, it's the decisions that you made. That's not always an easy thing. And as humans, we're going to make mistakes. The husband is going to make decisions. Sometimes that's the wrong decision. But hopefully if he loves his family enough, he's doing it with the right reasons. And he learns from it. But here's the point that I want to make. As wives, you can help your husband lead. You know, it's kind of interesting, and I didn't expect this, but as I was doing research on this lesson, I came across a number of questions on some websites where women were asking, how can I help my husband lead? And the point was, is he needed to be encouraged to do his job. Shouldn't be that way, but it was needed. And they're asking. So there are some wives that they want their husbands to lead them in a godly way. But now here is the point. Don't hinder your husband. Don't frustrate your husband as he tries to lead the home. And how do you do that? By making him miserable in doing his job. You know, if a wife has such an attitude that the husband cannot come to her without a problem, have you ever known a wife who becomes so angry when her husband confronts her with her problems? And they're legitimate. She's not doing what she ought to do. And he confronts her. And she threatens to kick him out of the house. And it only takes so long before the man realizes that he cannot confront his wife. You know what you have there? You have a miserable marriage relationship that's going to last the rest of your lives until some attitudes change. And when a wife will not let her husband lead, she has fault. Another example, refusing to submit to the husband. Being overly demanding. Or contradicting his decisions. And what I mean, you know, I'll give you an example of that. Financial struggles. I'm going to tell you right now, you're not going to get out of financial struggles unless you both work on it together. If either the husband or the wife wants to get out of debt and the other one ignores that and keeps contradicting whatever efforts are made, that is going to frustrate the marriage. And it's going to frustrate a husband in his ability to lead his family. Wives, you can help your husbands. It's real simple. How do you do it? By being a godly wife. It's just that simple. And I know I put that in here, and I could say the same thing about husbands and their responsibilities toward their wives. And we'll deal more with that when we resume this study in a couple of weeks. The lesson's yours.